Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Getting It Out Podcast. That was Chula Vista Hardcore Veterans Take Offense. The song was Assassination. It's off of their forthcoming album, Totality, coming out May 10th on Monarch Heavy. And let me tell you, I've been loving Take Offense for over a decade now. Their Tables Will Turn LP is one of my favorite records of the new millennium. Is it still a new millennium when we're 24 years in? I think so. I think it's great to say things are the best of the millennium. The other day, I found myself scribing out the Trapped Under Ice demo is the best of the millennium. It's true, too. Who's going to argue with that? Huh? Anyway, that summer that Tables Will Turn came out, at least I think it was summer, I felt like I saw Take Offense quite a bit, despite them being from California and me living in Baltimore at the time. Maybe I remember it differently than it happened. I know they definitely came through on a tour with Alpha and Omega. I've got that poster somewhere in my garage. And I had a whole bunch of Take Offense t-shirts. I must have sold them over the years. It's something I do, recycle the t-shirts. Still got the long sleeve from that tour in the garage, though, too. Anyway, stop talking about the past. Let's talk about the future. The new album, Totality, finds the band continuing on their path of adjoining classic California thrash metal like Excel and Suicidal Tendencies with ripping modern hardcore. It was always easy to say it's like a combination of Terror and Suicidal. And that was the way I explained them for years. But now there's like way more guitar in here. Guitarist Greg Sirwanka. That guy fucking rips, man. You may have also seen him on stage with Turnstiles. He filled in for them for quite a while shortly after Glow On came out. But now he's back with the band that brought him to the dance, Take Offense. And I'm pretty stoked on it. I've got all their records on my shelf now, and I'm looking forward to adding another one. Assassination is a great indication that this new one's going to be excellent. Speaking of bands that have been around for a while that are now doing something new, on this episode of the podcast, I've got an interview with Stretch Armstrong, guitarist Scott Dempsey, and David Cease. We're talking about their new record, The Revealing, the current state of the band, the reasons that they're back, and so much more. It's another band I loved for many years that's got something new for our little ear holes. And before we get into that, though, I think it's best that we all spend a little time with our friends from New Jersey. Hot tub.
Chicken! Make family out of friends! Make friends out of enemies! Peace to my family! Make friends till they bury all the places we've been! We're never sitting it out! We be getting it in! Where you getting it out? I said all the places we've been! We're never sitting it out! We'll be getting it in! Where you getting it out?
Get in! I associate a lot of memories with music, with bands. I think that's common. I think lots of us do that, some probably more than others. Me, maybe on the more extreme side, I'm willing to admit that. It's probably true. Typically, they're not big memories. They're just little funny things, things that happened. I've seen a lot of bands, you know what I mean? It makes me think of being in certain rooms, makes me think of certain violent altercations. It's simple stuff like that. Well, things that only someone who grew up going to hardcore shows can probably relate to. Stretch Armstrong is one of those bands, not the violent part. There's almost no violence at any Stretch Armstrong show that I can ever remember. Sure, there was moshing that could get violent, but not intentionally. That was like consensual violence. Stretch Armstrong was like good vibes all the time, every show that I remember going to, at least. I'm sure they've played to some shot out rooms where there wasn't a lot of crowd participation, but that was never the case when I saw them hit the stage, whether that was the Monroeville Fire Hall, the Autobar, the Championships, Hellfest. I could go on and on the places I've seen Stretch Armstrong take the stage. And typically I've got a good memory of that. Sometimes it's even just the kind of aftermath of the show that they left behind, the wake of friendliness. It was true. It happened. I don't know what it was. I mean, I do know what it was. It was the band. It was the vibe. It was the nature of their music. It was the way they could somehow soften a crowd that was full of pent-up rage, which was either real or imagined, depend on who you asked. But it brought out the fun in hardcore. Something only a few bands have been able to consistently do over the years. Whether I think of crowd surfing on stage at the original Champ in Lemoyne, or one of the many times I saw him in Baltimore, the first thing that I'm always going to associate with Stretch Armstrong is a t-shirt I have in my drawer. It's a t-shirt that was bought for me by my best friend at the time. His name was Scotto, or at least that's what we called him. In talking with the band prior to recording this episode, I wasn't able to nail down the date that it was. I know it wasn't part of the Made tour when they were there with Out to Win, Terror, Between the Buried and Me. I know it wasn't at the Troc when I saw him with Terror, Throwdown, Norma Jean, whoever else was on that show. I am certain, though, it was at the Autobar. And I know that I was there with my friend Scotto because we saw the band, we watched them play. It was a couple days before I was about to go back to college. And I had entered that summer with a broken hand, which I think was actually earned while fighting, in his defense, at Fletcher's in Fells Point in Baltimore at a Make Your Stand show, if anybody heard of that band, which we later changed to Break Your Hand. But anyway, I wasn't able to work a good job. I had to work temp jobs through the summer because I couldn't work at the brick making factory that I typically would over the summers. Stacking bricks at LWB refractories. That was a real job. You'd stack bricks. A lot more complicated than it sounds. You used a vacuum to pick up brick that weren't fired yet in the kiln, so they would break apart if you used your hands. You would crush bricks. Anyway, I couldn't do that job that paid pretty well for what I was at the time. So I was broke as shit, and I was going back to college with no money. Not ideal. But of course, I still made time and money for my hardcore show. So we went to Baltimore, saw Stretch Armstrong. I remember looking at a t-shirt they had for sale, a gray t-shirt. And I can't believe I said it out loud. It's not something I would normally do, but I was just like, I wish I could buy that t-shirt, but I have $0. And then we carried on with our day. And then at the end of the show, Scotto comes walking up to me, throws the t-shirt at me, says, consider it a going away present. And right away, that became the hardcore t-shirt that meant the most to me ever. And unfortunately, that meaning magnified just a couple years ago when Scotto, that best friend that I ever had, took his own life. And I've mentioned that before here. That's nothing new. I've also mentioned that as I record these episodes, I'm literally staring straight into a picture of him that I have on my desk where he's playing air guitar in front of the band Mantis that won the MTV Making a Band for Ozfest, something, whatever. And things like this image and bands like Stretch Armstrong make me think of all the fun that I had with not only just Scotto, who's not around anymore, but all the other great friends I've had who are no longer with me. So I know it'd be easy to automatically correlate listening to Stretch Armstrong with strictly nostalgia or missing someone or grieving someone. Instead, I choose to think about all the fun I had with not only Scotto, but all my friends at Stretch Armstrong shows. So needless to say, I was delighted when they dropped a new batch of songs, The Revealing, recently on Iodine Recordings, available on streaming at least. The physical is yet to come. And I jumped at the opportunity to talk at two guys from the band. So let's get into that conversation now. But first, a track from the record. This is A Revealing, and then my conversation with David and Scott. Back after being away quite a while. We use those terms kind of vaguely, back and away.
Very vaguely.
Well, you want to keep your expectations very low here.
Well that's where my next questions come from. Are you guys just going to break up again, or are you back, or what's going on?
You know, I heard Scott say this, and I've thought about it a million times. It's the best way to say it. Every show could have been our last show.
I say it to everyone. It's reality. Any show you come to, and it's not because we've never even talked about like not playing anymore. It's just how it is. It's just hard for us to do it. You know,
and this whole reality. Yeah, and this whole thing is just like, this whole being back has just kind of fell in our laps the whole way. It's which is amazing, right? That we're really grateful, but it's, I don't know. It just kind of happened, and we just kind of kept saying yes to a few things, and here we are.
Yeah. I mean, the quote unquote back happened with the first Furnace Fest. And I don't know how much you want to talk about that, but that was kind of where we were like, we didn't know if we could even do it. You know, we had to get together and see if it even gelled, if it even worked, if John could play the drums fast still, you know, if Chris could sing the same way, and it just worked. So that was kind of the back. You know, we actually played a show in 2011 once too. And you know, so we're never really gone, but we're just never active, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was one thing I couldn't remember if there was ever a, you know, it got real popular or real trendy, I guess more so be the word, for bands to make these big last show announcements, maybe do a last tour and then have a reunion show. And then like, it was just like a, it was kind of a, like, it kind of became like an obnoxious way for a band to
make a lot of money.
The cash grab.
No, that was never the intention. It was just kind of like, we had these kind of one-off things that popped up here and there after we sort of stopped touring full time, you know? And so I could definitely see how it might look that way to folks if, you know, if they're not in the circle, you know, but no, it was never like, hey, let's leave and then come back and this and that, you know, it was all, you know, it just seemed right to do, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Well, I'm glad you're back in whatever capacity.
I am too.
But before we dive totally into right now, I do want to go all the way back briefly, because, and there's a specific reason for that, because anytime I have on a, let's say, Carolina, I like to make sure that everybody knows the rest of the country thinks it's one state, like myself. Anytime a Carolina based hardcore band, anytime I speak to them and I ask them like a point of reference, a source of inspiration, Stretch Armstrong inevitably comes up.
Oh, wow. That's
so now I want to ask you, since there, you guys can't say yourselves, so who is it? Who was it locally? And I mean, and that's what I want to kind of concentrate on. In the Carolinas, was there a band that kind of was a source of inspiration and influence to start the band?
To start the band?
Yeah.
I mean, a big band growing up, a big local, there were, I would say for me, there were two probably big bands locally that really like got me going as far as like a local band that's sort of big. And one is a band called Bedlam Hour. They were on Positive Force and they're from Columbia. And another band is called Antischism. Mm. And I don't know if you're familiar with any of those bands, but they were, for me, you know, they were a big part in, you know, from a local band standpoint, they were big in kind of shaping the way I thought and seeing how bands play. And, you know, back then felt like they were so big, you know, but in reality, you know, Antischism actually did. I mean, they both got pretty big, I guess, for the time, but local band, you know, but if you're going non-local band, it was a band for me like 7 Seconds or like Gorilla Biscuits or Stick of It All, or, you know, those types of bands.
Yeah, and Antischism, like in the crust punk scene, is international. I mean, they're right. Huge.
Yeah, I mean, they were, and they used to. So Chris and I were in another band, a high school band before Stretch Armstrong, and the Antischism people, I would say, guys and girls, because they had a guy and a girl, and they would come to our practices. We'd play shows together, so it was just cool that we had known them, you know, as friends, and they did get that sort of national recognition from that crust punk scene. Really good band if you never listened to them.
Yeah, they're real rad, and their music still completely holds up. And Bedlam Hour just put out an EP not too long ago too, and the singer Chuck's voice is amazing. It's incredible. And I can add those same two bands for me, but for me, the band that Scott and our singer Chris was in a big inspiration for me. So the band that he just mentioned, it was called Straight Up. And, you know, once I realized that there was like a punk hardcore band in the same, or really in the next town, that's when everything shifted for me. I was like, wow, wait, you mean people can do this? Like, dudes that have guitars, you know, people that have guitars, like we can just do this. And that, so that was really inspirational. And then, you know, before I even met Scott and Chris, like I'd had their demos and had worn them out. I mean, literally worn them out. So like when I met these guys, I was kind of starstruck. And then, you know, Scott hit me up and was like, hey, do you want to jam? And, you know, I was fully on board. Yeah. And by the way, that one of the new songs on our EP, is a cover of that band Straight Up. So the song Take a Stand on the new EP is a song from that band that Scott and Chris used to be in.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Yeah. We thought it would be a cool. So back to Straight Up, we did a couple little things, you know, we weren't a big band. We were a regional band, you know, Chris and I were in high school and we put out a split 7-inch with another band called Unheard. Those guys, two of those guys in that band later started a band called Ass Factor 4. I don't know if you've heard of them, but we did a split 7-inch, and there was one song on that 7-inch that Chris sang, and we always loved that song, and we always thought it would be cool to get a proper recording of that song, because when we recorded that song, it was on an 8-track at this guy's studio in his basement, you know, and you know, it just sounded horrible. But it, not horrible, it sounded the time, 1991 maybe.
Right.
1990. And so I'm sure we'll get into the EP later, but yeah, that song, we finally got to like do it up, and it's, we recorded pretty much exactly the same way, but it's got a good recording and, you know, a guest singer on it, which makes it even cooler, more of a full circle moment for us. So.
Yeah. Is that even acknowledged? I know the guest singer, of course, is that even acknowledged that it's a cover of the previous band?
It will be on the LP. Okay.
It's not yet, at least in the stuff that
I heard, it's a little confusing. I know.
Yeah, it's in the liner notes, but obviously there's no liner notes because the way we released this, we put it out and then, you know, the vinyl and stuff's pre-ordered, but not out yet. So, and there's no liner notes really, except I think it all it says is Steve Evans produced it, but there's, it's not really out there yet.
Well, I mean, we'll jump all around here, but I want to ask you about that since we're on the subject anyway. The idea to surprise release it, not only surprise release it, but then do it in like two waves where it's just the digital, then the physical later. Why is that the method you guys chose to roll this out?
Well, so, and I can tell you more about the whole Iodine connection too, if we want to get down that road. But sure. So when Casey puts out things, I think what they normally do, and he told me this is the way they normally do it, is like, you know, a band will have a new release. They'll release a single, they'll release another single, and then they'll put out the album. And I think for a label standpoint, it's a way to get a wave of, you know, connections or engagement, whatever you want to call it, sure, like three times, maybe, you know, you got a single, then another single, then a release, and then whatever. And so when David and I, when the whole recording came up and we were finally got to talking about release date and whatever, Dave and I were talking about it. And I was really, you know, with six songs, it's 14 minutes, you know, you put out two songs, that's almost half the EP, you know, to me, that's not, and I'm not really a fan of dropping like four songs before the EP comes out for multiple reasons. You know, I think they need to, I want the listener to listen through them, to the songs in the order that we put them in. And also like, if you've already heard one song, you're going to skip that one because you've already heard it. And plus I just wanted the old school way of like, getting something, you know, back in the day, you would buy a CD or a record and you would listen to it straight through. And I never really thought about it until like, I was a big fan of that band, No Pressure. That's pretty prominent right now. And they had a 7-inch out. And one day I got in my car and I turned on Spotify or Apple Music, whatever I had. And there's a brand new LP and I was blown away. I was like, this is so cool. They just like, didn't tell anybody. They just dropped it. No one knew. And when Dave and I were talking, we both felt the same way. And I went to Casey and I said, we don't want to do singles. We don't want to tell anybody. We want to keep this under wraps. And luckily it stayed under wraps. And we just dropped it, you know, on a Friday. And I think that was the way to go because people seemed stoked that that's how it happened.
Yeah. And I think too, you know, like if you release a single, you reckon it's the best song that you got. And then, and I felt like these songs were reasonably diverse, and so it's like you might be into one sort of aspect of the EP but not into all of it, so it, I don't know, I couldn't really narrow down what would be a good single, you know, that would capture the attention. You know, if I hear a single from a band and I don't really like it, I'm probably not going to go check out the rest, right? So
that's fair. Yeah.
And Casey was totally cool with it. He said he's like, I've never done it this way, but if that's what you guys want, that's how we'll do it. And I guess that's why when we decided a release date, you know, the records weren't ready. We went in the studio in November and we had the songs mixed and mastered by what would you say, David? End of January, maybe? When it was finished?
Yeah.
And it's like, we didn't want to sit on them. We're just like, what's the earliest we can put these out? And then, so we'll just drop the pre-order from the vinyl the same day. And that's just how we'll do it. So that's how it happened. Casey could probably tell you more on that. But he was super cool with letting us do it that way, because he had never done it that way before, you know, because from his, like I said, from his standpoint, he wants to milk it as long as he can to get more engagement. And I understand that, but yeah, if we would have had a 12 song LP, maybe we would have done it differently, but I just thought this was the coolest way to just,
yeah, I agree.
Give everyone a surprise, you know?
Yeah. I don't think it's a bad way to do it. Only as a, entity is a weird word to use, but like someone like myself who does a lot of music promotion, it's only frustrating for someone like me who's like, oh shit, I could have like done stuff, you know, let people know. But it is a common way that to me, the best hardcore labels right now are releasing records. Days just put out one from a band called Kidnap today, which I haven't even heard. I don't even know what it sounds like, but I'm just like, okay, they did another one of these in the middle of the week. I want to listen to it. I'm going to listen to the whole thing at one time. There's no other competing albums coming out on a fucking Monday to, you know, to deal with. Triple B does this as well. They did one for a band called No Way Out last week that I thought was excellent. You know, just a 7-inch and whatever. It's a nice way to release things by surprise like that. Everybody can't do it or it wouldn't work, but it's nice when you can slip one in.
It worked. And it's like people were totally surprised and it was so cool. You know, there's obviously a few people who probably knew and we had told close friends, but like,
I think you guys had hinted at it before, right?
Yeah. I do the Instagram and I gave a couple hints. And if you're watching, you knew, but it was never like really told that, yes, we are doing this. It was, you know, but it, you know, and then a week before we dropped a little like tease, you know, something's coming on this date and that's what it was. So a lot of people thought it was another re-release of a vinyl. So people, I think, were presently surprised when they got some new songs.
Well, I think people would have been happy with another re-release too, because that seems like that Rituals of Life went pretty well.
Yeah, that one and we did Revolution Transmission re-release. So that did well too as well. So Got a couple more left we could do.
Well, while we're on Iodine, tell me about that. You mentioned what's the ties to Iodine? How did you end up working with Casey?
David, I guess I'll take this one. Since,
yeah, go for it, man.
I talked to Casey. Casey's came to me through Steve, the drummer from Further, Strong Arm, Shiloh. He had another band and they did a release with Casey and you know, he was like, he contacted me. He's like, Casey would love to do some re-releases. Would you be interested? And I was like, yeah, I'll talk to him. And we just hit it off. One thing about Casey is he's sort of like us in the fact that he's an older guy that's been around for a while. He went away and he came back, you know, sort of the same thing we did. And it just worked. It's, you know, those records had only been pressed once and they've been out of press forever. And so and now is the time when vinyl is sort of like people are into vinyl again. And it just made sense. And it was just a cool way to like get those records back out again. And it kind of went from there. I mean, he's really the one that made this recording happen. And that's a whole nother story that we can get into if you want, but
layers.
Yeah, definitely layers.
It's like a good lasagna or tiramisu.
It sounds though, like maybe, correct me if I'm wrong, of course, that this has all kind of worked out really well and easily from my perspective.
A lot of it has. And getting ready for the EP was lots and lots of work, you know, but definitely the logistics and all that kind of stuff, you know, has been nice. It's kind of like you said before, not everybody can do it. We're fortunate, right? Like that somebody cares, that someone's willing to just kind of work with us kind of on terms that we would like to. And that's amazing. And not everybody gets that opportunity. So we're super grateful. And yeah, a lot of work went into getting ready for this EP. So yes, it worked really well. And it certainly took heaps and heaps of work as well.
And the actual recording just sort of the whole way it came about is it just fell in our laps. You know, it was last summer. Casey calls me out of the blue and he's like, would you guys ever be interested in recording with Steve Evans? And immediately my jaw dropped because a little known fact is we were supposed to record Rituals of Life with Steve Evans, and we were booked and the times just got messed up and we had to cancel and reschedule. And we ended up recording with Barry Pointer in Little Rock. And so we'd always wanted to record with Steve, and obviously he went on to record
everything.
So many great records from the hardcore scene back then, you know. Mm-hmm. But Casey had a band that they had already booked time and they broke up. And he's like, I got this time and I can't get my deposit back, but I still want to use it. He's like, would you guys be interested? And I'm like, holy cow. All right. I was like, let me call David. So I get off the phone with Casey. I call David right away. I tell David, he's like, oh yes. But we had toyed around. We had like two half written songs at that point. And we had talked about doing some new music, but it was just too daunting. Like, how are we going to do it? How are we going to get a good producer? How are we going to fund it? How are we going to put it out? Like all these questions. And like we said at the beginning, you know, before you press record, we're still like barely, we're not really back, but we're playing. And so it was just like, we kind of abandoned the idea. And then he calls with that news. He's like, I got it, but you got to do it by this time. And so like, so then that's what David's talking about. It kind of went into high gear and we had to like, you know, lack of a better word, shit or get off the pot, you know? So we decided to go for it. And that's where David really stepped up with a lot of the music writing and demoing and all that stuff. But the actual recording happening was, again, Casey just, he had been talking to me forever about doing new songs. I'm like, there's no way. I just don't see how we could do it. And then it just happened because he had this Steve Evans time already booked.
And, you know, kind of looking back, I think that was probably the only way it could happen is something like that, because you don't want to come back after that long and put out something that doesn't sound good, that doesn't sound hard and heavy and well done. And so Steve was, it was amazing to get that opportunity because he was exactly what we needed for this, you know, and that would not have been something we probably would have just searched out on our own. So yeah, that was
no, because most of these guys like Steve, they're booked out years in advance
forever. Right. Yeah.
And he already happened to have this little block of time. And so we were able to do it. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. Sometimes you need that sense of urgency and
for sure. You know, to make
something good.
Absolutely. Yeah. A deadline is the greatest for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, tell me about your expectations in releasing new music now, playing shows now, now that you've been gone for quite a while, checking in now and then, you know, playing a show here and there, reissuing stuff. I guess, what are the overall expectations that you guys have for Stretch Armstrong at this point?
We've got Furnace Fest coming up. What's that, September, Scott?
I think it's October this year. October 4th,
and then and we're trying to put together a local thing here in South Carolina in our hometown. And we often chatter about maybe trying to get out to the West Coast. But I mean, it's all pretty vague. You know, we've got these two things sort of on the immediate horizon, but I don't have any expectation. I would definitely like to go to the West Coast. Personally, I'd like to go overseas, do a little quick something in Europe, you know, but, we just have to find the right exact thing to do, but I don't know that there's any common expectation other than these two. Scott, do you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, Dan, it's just, we all have careers,
right?
You know, most of us have families, wives, kids, you know, it's just everything that goes along with that. It's hard to like, even think like David talking about possibly going to Europe. Yes, that would be cool. But in order to make Europe work, it's like the first week you kind of recoup your costs. The second week you might make money. And that's 2 weeks. Can we all take off our jobs for 2 weeks? Can we all be away from our families for 2 weeks? It's that kind of stuff that is hard for us, you know? I mean, it was hard for us just to do we did a New Jersey show and the Long Island show. I mean, it comes a big logistic thing when you got to talk plane tickets and hotels and rental cars and all that, you know, going to California or going to Europe is.
Yeah. We don't have any rentals. Infrastructure. We have no infrastructure.
You guys sound and like we do me it and all. My wife just talking about our vacation. We just took to Disney World, the rental car.
Well, and see, Scott also lives in New Jersey. So if we're going to practice, I mean, a handful of us can practice, but really to get the band together, we've got to do plane tickets and rental cars and, you know, that's the cost. And so we have to take into account all that stuff, you know? So now, obviously if we play a couple of shows close together, we don't have to do so much practicing, but we do. I mean, we're not a touring band. We're not an active band. So we lose our fitness, you know, so we definitely have to practice.
Yeah. Of course. And, I was in a band for a little bit, not many people knew who we were, whatever. We got back together to do a benefit show a few years later and, tried to like go into it relatively cold with like one practice and it was a disaster.
Totally.
Like, of course it would be.
You know. What could go wrong?
Yeah. So I can't imagine when people actually do care about your band, in your case, to actually want to get that right.
Well, and you mentioned the word expectation. I think that's probably also a factor that limits sometimes what we do, because we do have an expectation of ourselves as well. Like, we don't want to get up there and flail, you know, like we want to. In our minds, probably we still think of ourselves as when we were a touring machine, and we're simply not that. So it's tough to accept that we're not going to be that tight, that together, that powerful, you know? And so, you know, you weigh that out when you're making decisions too, or I do anyway, you know, cause I don't want to half step it up. You don't want people to come and see you after so many years and you let them down. You know, you want to bring it and you want them to remember why they liked you and you want to make it worth. I mean, when we did a local show a couple of years ago here in our hometown, we had people flying from all over the place. And it's like, I would have been so bummed if we didn't give them everything we had and could give, you know, like they made a lot of effort to get here. Mm-hmm. and I want to, you know, we want to deliver for them.
Without hurting ourselves.
Yeah. Well, cause that happens too.
It did happen. Yes.
Yeah. Do you and Chris.
How did you hurt yourself playing? Was there some posse jumps? Is that it? It was
posse jumps.
Yeah, this is nothing positive about this. In 2011, we played a festival in Arizona. Second song in, I did a posse jump, and it came down negative. I fully ruptured my Achilles.
Oh, no.
Second song in, but I stood there like Kobe Bryant did when he tore his Achilles and shot his free throws. I played the whole set just standing there with a fully ruptured Achilles, and then David and I went to the ER, and then I got on a flight back to New York.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
That night in the, let's see, it's the very back row in the middle with an Aircast on. It was horrible.
Did you ever put on a pair of sweatpants and there's like a sock stuck in it? You know what I'm talking about? Like it's from the dryer. That's what the back of his leg looked like. But it was pretty gnarly.
Well, first, I'm impressed by two things about that story. One is that you got through it because that sounds terrible and kept playing. Second is the basketball reference, because I myself am a big NBA fan. So I just want to pat you on the back for the Kobe Bryant foul shot reference.
Yeah, I mean, he shot both throws. Because when you tear your Achilles, your bones are still intact, so you could kind of stand there still. Mm-hmm. It's not, but you know, you're this is the thing that connects the muscles from the calf to the foot. So yeah, it was rough, but yeah, once you tear your Achilles, you start realizing all the people who tore their Achilles. David Beckham, Kobe Bryant, the guy from Philly, slugger guy, he tore the Achilles right.
Kevin Durant did it. Clay Thompson did it. Yeah. It's been common. Like Kirk Cousins did it last year.
Yep. That's right. Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah. More common now, it seems like. People are getting over it quicker. So somehow, I don't know how. I don't know what drugs they're shooting into themselves.
It's AI. Yeah, AI. Yeah.
That's a 3D printed tendon. Yep.
But that. So in that point, we don't want to, we're older, you know, we're older guys. So like, we can't jump around. Like, even though every time we play, I'm jumping around and my wife's like, Don't do it. But you just feel it and you start going crazy. And you hope, I've been trying to be, David is very fit. He runs marathons. He's like David looks better than he looked when he was 20. You know, he's one of those guys, but us normal people have to make sure we're in a little bit of stage shape.
Yeah. Good for you, David. That's impressive as well. I myself run, but I like, My minimum is 3, and I think my maximum is 4 miles. That's
good, man.
That's it. Right. I do it. I try to do it every day. But Pennsylvania is freezing, so I'm not.
Yeah. Yeah. No, 3-4 a day is amazing. That's wonderful.
Well, that guy does 24 miles.
Yeah, no, I don't. That's why it's so impressive to me, because I've only done a half marathon once on my own. Just it was like in an afternoon. I mowed the lawn and then I ran a half marathon.
that's like the dad triathlon.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it was.
And then you mow the lawn, you go for a run, you come back and you do the dishes. That's the triathlon.
But the reason I bring that up is because I did half of it and it was like the most impossible, impressive feat of my life. And people like yourself who do them, maybe not easily, but just do them in general it's amazing to me.
Well, and thresholds are thresholds, you know, I mean, like what's hard for somebody is hard for somebody. So it's just a matter of hanging out around that threshold a bunch, but yeah. Right.
Well, all right. Tell me, you guys, one of you mentioned being a touring machine, maybe back in the day. So I'm just curious, where were the best shows for Stretch Armstrong back in the day?
Wow. Mm.
Go ahead, David. You take that.
The West Coast was always good, but we're from South Carolina and there's just not that many people here. So it's like, you know, a good show is a full room, but the rooms are small. So it's like, I don't know. Like we always enjoyed the Chain Reaction. New Jersey was like a second home to us. We had a lot of connections there historically. And I think like the Chain Reaction in Anaheim was always cool. New York was actually pretty good. We had a great show at CB's back in the day of the Wetlands. Did you ever go there?
No.
That was a really rad spot. And we had, that was, I don't know, maybe early 2000s. And when we would play there, that was great. Internationally, like, the Netherlands were always sort of a second home. Our connections with Reflections Records and that sort of thing. We kind of had a following there that was always kind of nice. We always enjoyed Prague. Yeah. I don't know. It wasn't like, just like this, I never felt like we could always count on something, you know, but we're always pleased, you know.
Definitely California and New Jersey were always good. We had some good Florida shows.
Florida was always hit or miss though, you know, because it's so big, man. Like so big and where are you gonna go?
I'm glad. That's good to hear that you've named several places. So that's more than most bands get to say, you know.
Yeah. I enjoyed touring. Well, I enjoyed parts of touring, and it was always nice. You know, the West Coast was always just nice to get there because it was different, you know, and getting to Europe was always nice because it was different, and getting to the Northeast was nice because it was different. And it was always rad to be in the Northeast because you could be in so many different cities so easily and quickly. It's, you know, different than down South. Oh, and I'll have to also mention, PA was good. We played the Chameleon Club.
Well, it used to be here. There's a piece of the stage on my wall in the garage now.
Oh, nice.
It was a COVID casualty.
A COVID casualty. Yeah. And we had early roots in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, probably right here.
Yeah. I'm familiar. Schoolyard Bully.
Yeah. Classic Rags, Right Start. Those were some early standout welcome spots too.
Where hasn't Stretch Armstrong been?
We never made it to Australia, and we never made it to South America, and we never made it to the Middle East. We had opportunities to do each, and it just didn't work out for whatever reason. Like, South America was actually in the works, and it just kind of started getting, I don't know, things started to seem like they were getting sketchy and falling apart, and we just kind of let it go. But, yeah, we did, you know, we did North America, like we did Canada and Mexico and that sort of thing, but we never got to Australia. Always wanted to do that. And we've got connections in New Zealand as well, and it would be amazing to get out there, but I mean, that's around the world.
We did play Iceland, which was pretty cool.
Oh, yes, we did. That was
cool.
Because we had a European tour, and Icelandic Air was offering like cheaper tickets if you would stop over in Iceland, you know, because they're trying to get tourism there. Mm-hmm. So we did that and just booked a show there. So
it was rad. Cool. It was only like a 5-hour flight from Logan in Boston. And yeah, we spent like 24 hours there. It was amazing.
Yeah. Reykjavik.
That's pretty cool. Right? Cause you kind of, I mean, when you typically flying to Europe, you kind of go that way anyway, cause of the curvature of the earth or whatever reason is. I just know you do it cause I've done it.
If you believe in that sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Oh, we got a Kyrie Irving here.
I kid. Yeah. But yeah, those were all welcome spots for sure.
Awesome. Well, back on the history of the band tour, your past, I wanted to ask if there were any obvious, in hindsight, missteps or mistakes that you made first time around with Stretch Armstrong.
Wow. Go for it, Scott.
You know, I thought of something, but I don't know if I'm going to bring it up. You go,
well, David. Well, all right. I feel like I think of a misstep. So historically, I think a lot of people thought we were a full-time band before we were. You know, we were so busy before we actually dropped everything and decided to be a band full-time. So, you know, we were doing a lot of these things that we were just mentioning, like on the weekends, you know, I mean, we had jobs in that and like would fly to California and come back for work on Monday, or we drive up to Boston. I feel like we rushed our Engage record, which was released in
2003. That was my thing. That was what
And I'll say, I don't think it was a failure at all, but I feel like that was one of those times where we felt pressure to do something because we were transitioning from being like a band that's just having a blast to trying to be a band that's going to go full time. And I felt like we rushed into that without really being prepared and without really having a lot of direction. It was a successful album for me in that I feel like we learned a whole lot about studios, and I think we learned a whole lot about songwriting. And not just what not to do, but things that do work. I mean, does that make sense? So but I feel like it was a mistake the timing was difficult because that was the record we launched our professional touring career on. And it was probably our least liked. So that's unfortunate in a way. And again, I'm happy because I felt like our next record was cool and I feel like this EP is dope. So it's like, I'm happy.
Yeah, it was a learning lesson.
Totally. Yep. Totally.
But yeah, that's what I was going to bring up. Yeah. I was going to say, yeah, the whole Engage recording, it
was tough. It was
David summed it up. Yeah. I mean, you know,
that's really interesting. You say that because, earlier today I was like, well, I'll take a listen back through the discography you know, and I just pulled up Spotify. And though I still have all your CDs in my garage, but I don't have a CD player. So I don't know what good that is. But anyway, so I was like, all right, I'll just listen to them on Spotify. And I came across the Engage record and I forgot that it existed.
Yeah.
And like, and I, of course, there's no way I would have forgot any of the other ones. But, and like, I know I have it. Like now, once I saw it, looked at the covers, like, yeah, I definitely had that one.
Yeah.
But I forgot it. Like, yeah. I couldn't believe that. Yeah.
Yeah. It was just a weird thing. You know, it was so tough to do that because we were trying to wind down our careers and we were also trying to record this record, and it was up in Jersey. And you know, at the time we were all living in South Carolina. So I don't know, Scott, correct me. I don't know if we were all there at one time ever together. I felt like it was just like a couple of us and a couple of us and a couple of us.
Yeah, it was. And then, you know, there were studio producer issues and
it was tough.
A mismatch. It was just, a lot of things went wrong that, you know, didn't Chris get sick flying in, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah. He was flying into Newark. Yeah.
Well, going off of that, and we'll do the opposite here. Is there any things you look back on and that you were able to say, oh, we did this right, let's do this again now?
I tell you what, I don't have any regrets, and I'm so happy and proud of this band. Like, granted, the decision to go full time is a tough one, you know, and to decide to stop being full time and to quit is also a tough one. But personally, I've learned so much through being in this band. I mean, Scott and I have been in this band. I mean, we started it in 1992. I mean, it literally has been a part of my life more than it hasn't been, you know what I mean? And so it's like, it's a real thing. And I've learned so much about any aspect you can think of in life. I've processed it through the lens of Stretch Armstrong, you know? And so I don't know. I'm just glad that we did it. You know, I'm glad that we decided to get instruments and go to a practice space and rent a storage shed and do whatever. And, you know, I have to give props to Scott. I give it to him all the time, or at least I mean to, but him and Chris and John, I mean, these guys are a little bit older than me, and they taught me, you know, how to go for things. They taught me how to do stuff myself. You know, they taught me that ethic, and it's, you know, that stuff comes into play every day of my life now. And when you learn that when you're 17, it's a pretty rad lesson to learn, you know? And I'm still super grateful for all that stuff. So I don't know if there's one accomplishment. It's rad to go all these places, but it's amazing to hear people say things like, your song helped me save a friend's life who was going through an emotional struggle, or your song meant this to me. Like, you can't even describe.
We get those all the time. Yeah, like we got one of those the other day, right, David? Remember the guy said that
it's just
daughter died or something. Yeah,
yeah.
Our lyrics got him through it or something. Yeah, and I will say, like, us getting back together, it's all about our friendship. I mean, we've always been friends, and one of the main reasons we still do it is just so we can. It's a way to bring us five together. Mm-hmm. And even if it's on being on stage is one thing, but when we get together and just practice and goof off and go out to eat and do whatever, like, it's just us having a second to, you know, not that we don't like our lives. We all love our lives, but it's having a second to go back to just us five hanging out and shooting the shit and joking around and just doing what we do. So this band is just, I would say that's the one thing, is just that, you know, these guys are lifelong friends, and we're all in this, you know, together, and we enjoy doing it when we can, you know.
Totally.
Do you feel that's easier to keep in sight at this point?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, we're older, and we also have other things going on. When you're in a van every day, it's easy to lose sight sometimes of the gratitude, right? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
I think so. I mean, and you know, It's interesting when you're a civilian now, right? And you look back at that and you get to jump back into the van for a second. And it does, it does remind you of all that excitement, and you do get a wave of gratitude and respect for the band and what it all means. But yeah, when it's the grind and the everyday thing, you can lose sight and you can take it for granted, you know?
Yeah. Well, all right, here's something I wanted to ask. And again, I know I'm jumping all over the place.
You're doing great. We love it.
That's fine.
All right. So you guys successfully wrote what I would consider a couple of like hardcore hits, right?
Wow.
Really? I mean, think about it. You like anthemic hits, like take For the Record, right? Of course, you know, it's a very popular song, big sing-alongs. Everybody from an era knows it, right? But did you find yourself at any point kind of chasing that dragon, trying to write those songs, or did they come more naturally?
I would say that song came very naturally. I felt like we chased the dragon after writing that.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you always have that. You see how a song does live, or you see how it moves people, and you try to recapture that. And it's really hard. It's really, really hard to do that. But that song itself actually came out really pretty naturally. Yeah. Well, and that was one of the cool things about this EP was we've done enough records and it's been long enough that we could sort of rip off ourselves in a way that isn't so obvious. You know what I mean? So I feel like there are some elements of For the Record in some of these new tracks.
But we didn't try to do that, you know, that's just how they came out.
Yeah, I mean? And it's our style.
I think what's so cool about this EP is there was pressure, I would say, because we had to do it in a fast turnaround. But other than that, there was no pressure. We had no label. We weren't trying to write a specific style. David did a lot of the writing, and David, you can talk to this, but the way I see it from him is he just did what he wanted to do for most of these songs. And that's what came out.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we did some new things on these collections of songs too, which we probably would have been scared to do before. And I'm glad we did it. But yeah, I think it is tempting to chase that dragon. You know, you get a popular song and how can you ever redo it? I'm trying to think of a band that's done it successfully, and I don't on the spot. I can't think of it. Can you, Dan?
No, it's you know, once you, I mean, maybe there's, I don't know. No, I can't. No.
Yeah. It's like you play your hit and then your encore is even bigger hit. Like it's, right.
That's yeah, it's that's usually not followed up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll say this. We only didn't play it last once.
Right. I mean, can Bane do a song better than Can We Start It?
You know, no, like, and they're just, like, they're the one that they that would be my example for them, too. You know,
that's what I was thinking. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's and that song probably came about pretty natural for them. But who knew that it was going to be such a sing along and everybody loves it. But that's just how it goes. You don't.
That's the weird thing about great songs, man. I mean, that go all the way back to Paranoid by Black Sabbath. That's the way that one came out too. You know, mm-hmm. Just real simple and last minute, and you know, becomes the hit. And they did pretty good following up their other stuff.
Yeah, they had a couple.
Yeah, they had a couple more. Yeah,
they do all right.
Yeah. All right. So the EP, The Revealing, Iodine Recordings. Officially out May 10th, though available now. This has kind of got two street dates available now streaming. What has been the initial reactions, and are you guys satisfied with what you've heard from people who've listened to the EP so far?
Scott, you get all the updates. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's been overwhelming because you know, putting out something new is scary, Dan. It's scary because like, you don't want to put out something that people hate. You know, you've been away for all these years, you know, people, if they want new Stretch Armstrong music, they want to love it. We want them to love it. But it's scary because you just don't know, you know, we early on, we were hearing demos of the songs and getting back mixes. We loved it as a band, but you know, we are the band. So we liked Engage too, you know, yeah. Did a lot of people like Engage. I don't know. So that's the thing is
that was funny, sorry.
But I've seen nothing but great things about this EP on all the social media that I follow, and it's really cool to see that. Seems like I honestly haven't seen a bad review or someone trashing it, which I thought I would, but I just haven't. It seems like everybody really loves the EP, and that's great, you know. And I think another cool thing about it and why people may like it is it's so quick, you know. It's like, mm-hmm. it's in, out, nobody gets hurt, you know, you're done. And then it's like, oh wow, maybe I'll listen to this again, you know. It's six songs, just bangers from front to back, and then that's it, you know. So I'm old. I don't have a large attention span anymore. So it's perfect, you know?
Yeah. And I definitely wrote short songs on purpose because I thought there's no reason to belabor the point, you know, let's go for it. Let's let it all out and let's move on. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of structured that way on purpose, just quick. I think the one song's like maybe over 3 minutes, but most of it's clocking in around two, which I think is good.
Well, I think you guys nailed it. I mean, I think you nailed it for the way you're explaining it and what you wanted it to be. I think this is exactly that. It sounds exactly like Stretch Armstrong. It sounds like you guys picked up where you left off. And it's got a couple of like, it's how do I say it? Right. Almost cohesive is not the word. It's got like something from each record. It feels there's a little old, little new. Of course, all of them are nearly 20 years old, so nothing's new, but you know what I'm saying, you know?
Yeah, totally. No,
it's cool to hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah. You know? And it's funny too, man. Like, I was chatting with a buddy of mine who's in the band with Honor, and that's another band that came out, I think, with a record after a good period of time. And I was actually chatting with a few of the guys in that band. I was like, man, you guys nailed it with your newest record. And that's not easy to do. And not only did you nail it, like you put out something that was just great. Like that newest with
Honor. So good. Oh, so good. Good.
And it's just like, it's not like, oh, that's good after how long. It's like, it's really good. And it's so impressive to do that. But I was chatting with one of the guys and he was asking me the same thing. And I was like, you know, it's also tough to know what people think about it when you're not playing them live. Like that's really where you get the feedback. Yeah. Like what's the kind of response from the live show. So, and you know, who knows if we'll ever know, I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Time will tell with that one.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you think you'll be able to make new young fans at this point?
Well, you know, our old fans are bringing their kids to shows.
That's a good point.
Yeah. So, like, that's dope.
Nepotism.
But you know, it's crazy. It's like this whole '90s thing, and like, and I'm kind of out of it, Dan. I gotta be like, I have zero social media. I'm not terribly juiced in, but like, I do recognize like this resurgence of the '90s stuff, and it's like, who knows, man? Maybe kids will get into hardcore, you know. I mean, especially bands that have been around since the '90s, who knows. But yeah, I mean, we know friends of ours who bring their kids to the shows, and they're into it, like they really like it. But I don't know, outside of our friends, I don't know. Scott,
that's good.
No, I mean, I totally see, you know, a lot of a festival like Furnace Fest, it happens a lot. You see parents bringing their kids, and it's a whole new generation, you know? So hopefully, you know, we haven't put out music in so long, but hopefully with a new release, it might, you know, it might reach some new people, you know?
Right. Well, that's kind of why I asked, because I was around the first time. So I know I like it, but I don't know what the kids think, you know? What the people who are really moving the hardcore scene these days actually, because I always admit that I'm out of touch to a degree.
Yeah, me too.
I mean? I do this. I stay in the loop by from far from the outside. You know what I mean? Like, but I try to keep up with what's going on. But I know where I'm at, you know. So,
well, and it's too, I mean, the sound of hardcore is changing too, right? Like it's definitely got a different vibe right now. The little bit that I do know of what's going on, I mean, I do try to listen to some new bands, and they definitely have different production sounds. You know what I mean? It's not just like the riffs are a little bit different and maybe the vocal style is different, but some of these newer bands, their actual production sounds different. Like, you see what I mean? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that, like, I'm remembering, you know, like when you would hear like a total 80s song when you were in the 90s, you'd just be turned off by it. Like you just couldn't get into it. It's like, oh, that's terrible. You know, that's old people's music. So it's like, I don't know, you know, it'll be interesting to see if the production of the music influences the way kids think about it too. So I don't know. It's interesting.
Well, and you also have the turnstile effect, you know, I mean,
yeah. That's right.
Those guys are turning on so many people to the hardcore scene. And, you know, you never know who's going to stumble across a hardcore song and get into hardcore when they weren't into hardcore before.
And their riffs are hard. I mean, they're hard.
Yeah.
They're hard riffs. There's no joke about
it. I'm definitely a Turnstile supporter.
Yeah.
Oh, likewise. I mean, they were real guys. So they were going to shows. I have been seeing them at shows for the last 20 years. Damn it. I mean, they were coming to the championship in Le Moyne, Pennsylvania.
Didn't they just recently play the Auto Bar like recently?
Yeah. But I mean, those guys were in, you know, they've been in other bands, but I mean, outside of that, they're like, just being in that Baltimore scene,
right.
They were, you know, kids in that.
And the thing I love about that sound is, to me, like you hear a lot of influences, but the thing that's really cool is you hear like the Bad Brains, Eye Against Eye, like some of the Stranger songs, like Secret 77, you know, and you hear that kind of vibe on the guitars. Right. And like the first time I heard that, I was like, yes, super stoked, because that, you know, that was kind of even strange for back then. And then now that these guys are kind of perfecting, it's really cool.
It is. It's like they're taking all the good parts. I used to always joke about how bad Bad Brains reggae was. And I'm still not joking when I say it's terrible, but like you're talking about Secret 77 is not quite the reggae stuff. That's like something different. And you're
right. It's like kind of a chorusy guitar, like little bit of rock. And then, it's great, man. It's really killer.
Well, all right, guys. So the record, physical release date, May 10th, and available now for streaming. So it's a weird time to ask this question, but because you're kind of right in between the two things, but what are you most looking forward to about the release of this?
Ooh, I'm excited for people to see the artwork and to be able to kind of sit down with it and hold it, you know? That's always a rad thing. You know, I love doing that. Sitting, looking at the art, listening to the music, reading the lyrics. I'm excited for people to be able to do that.
I was excited. The release altogether, we had our old friend Kevin Ray do all the artwork, and he's been a friend of the band before the band even existed, him and his whole family. And I just think he did a great job. There's so many layers that he did in that artwork that people might not even get. You know, it's just... The guy is just, I was really blown away by his artwork. And so that's something that I look forward to everyone. I mean, people just see the cover right now. They don't see everything else. That's
right.
The cover is the coolest part, but there's like David was saying, there's an insert with lyrics and photos and liner notes. And it just takes me back to the old days. Like we were talking about in the beginning about how you release a record. Like I would get a record, I would go home, I'd put it on, I would sit down, I would read everything while I'm listening to it. And, you know, and I told Casey, I'm like, when this comes out, like on Spotify, I want the lyrics on there, you know, like, I think it's important for people to read the lyrics with the songs. And, you know, it's just a lot of that stuff gets lost nowadays. And to me, that was, and probably to David and you too, Dan, that was probably a big part of our lives is reading all the inserts, you know?
Oh yeah. Oh,
that's how you found out about the next band to buy.
Exactly.
Right?
Thanks list. Yeah.
Read the thanks list, you know, it's perfect.
I don't even think we did. I don't think we did a thanks list.
Yeah.
It just gets too long at this point.
It would just be something else for us to all argue about.
Yes.
After the release of the official street date of the revealing, what is ahead for Stretch Armstrong?
Literally, we already told you. There's not much on the books, right? I mean,
yeah, like, I'm looking
like,
at the
like
date.
we always say, any, and we're not trying to be morbid when we say this, but any Stretch show could be the last one, just because we have Furnace Fest booked, and we're going to try to do a Columbia hometown show, maybe a record release show in the summer. We would love to get to California. But we don't have, other than Furnace Fest, nothing. Furnace Fest is the only booked thing we have right now.
October 4th through 6th.
Yeah, that? we're playing Saturday. I will reveal that. Oh, I don't know. We'll reveal that. That's fine. We're playing Saturday and we're playing on the Shed stage where we always play.
That's enough. Yeah, you know what I mean? That's enough things. Yeah. A record and a big fest date. That's good.
It's more than I thought we'd have.
So there you have it. That was my conversation with David and Scott of Stretch Armstrong. I want to thank them for their time, for their conversation, for their musical output over the years. To say I appreciate it is an understatement. Again, lots of good memories with the band. That track that you just heard is called Take a Stand. It features Luke Kohler there at the end on guest vocals. He's in a band called Sick of It All. You might have heard of them. We chatted a little bit about that song. So hopefully when you heard that, some bells and whistles went off in your brain. You went, ah, this is what they were talking about. And if not, don't worry. Nobody knows anyway. Nobody knows because they don't have the physical copy of the revealing yet. The EP, it arrives May 10th officially on Iodine Recordings. You need to get yourself a physical copy. I need to get myself a physical copy. It's certainly available for pre-saving, pre-ordering, pre-whatever. And preparing is what you want to be doing these days. Proactive, not reactive. Right. Anyway, May 10th, Iodine Recordings. Get it for yourself. And that will have to do it for this episode of the podcast. And you know what? I think that's enough. I think I've fulfilled my podcast obligations for you on this episode. Episode 380 of Getting It Out Podcast, if you're keeping track. That's not the real number. It's just the real number of episodes that are numbered. And actually, I've removed those numbers from the way the podcast publicly displays. Now it just says band name and the specific name of the person I'm talking to. But whatever, I'm letting you know. This is the 380th official episode of Getting It Out Podcast. And now it's over. But first, I'm going to end it with a track from a band, as I always do. And we're going to go over to Belfast, Ireland, for a band that wrote me an email. They have a new EP. It's called Strive. They are called Frayed Ends BC, and while so far they've been isolated to the Irish hardcore scene, they're looking to branch out. And the song they've chosen to do that with from the Strive EP is called With Dignity. There's a music video available for it, or at least there will be soon, but you don't need to go find that. You can just listen to the track right here. This is Frayed Ends BC with Dignity. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.